van Uppington tot Grootdrink, Groblershoop tot Keimoes, Riemvasmaak tot Rooiputs. Radiostasie van die Suidlanders, Radio Grootervier.
Ons het geluister na Gappie se liedjie Goliath, Logan Petersen se Afrikaner boervrou, Bok van Blerk se Dillery en Albert de Wet se Wat het gebeur by Aliwal Noord. Goeienaand en welkom weer eens by Radio Grootrivier vir ons uitsending van ons heerlike, fantastiese geselsprogram, die Suidlanders Gesels. En met hierdie reeks gesels ons met departementshoofde leiers van die Suidlanders om 'n bietjie meer perspektief te kry, om te hoor wat agter die skerms by hierdie organisasie uit aangaan. En dan vanaand gesels ons weer eens met Simon Roche. Hy is die nasionale departementshoof van buitelands en ook natuurlik is hy nogal 'n kenner op wat aangaan in die wêreld op die oomblik. Ons weet dit lyk of die hele wêreld besig is om mal te raak. Dit lyk of die derde wêreldoorlog al amper aan die gang is en dit is alles kennis wat Simon Roche natuurlik het. So kom ons kyk of ons dan vir Simon op die lyn kan kry. Goeienaand Simon, kan jy my hoor?
Ja, ek kan jou hoor Marius. Goeienaand, kan jy my hoor?
Daar's hy, helder en duidelik.
Ek is bly om dit te hoor.
Welkom weer eens Simon hier by Radio Grootrivier vir ons Suidlanders Geselsprogram. Ons het laasweek 'n bietjie gesê ons gaan oor Turkye praat, maar dan het ek ook laasweek die luisteraars uitgenooi en gevra het hulle as hulle enige vrae het, laat hulle deurstuur en dan kan ek dit vir jou sê en dan kan ons dit 'n bietjie behandel op hierdie program. En ons het 'n luisteraar gehad wat 'n paar vrae gevra gehad het. Dit is Marius, hy luister van al die pad van Namibië af saam met ons. En hy het gesê, hy besef dat die MK-partij en Natalse kant is half Russies, maar toch in die Europese lande, daar Richards Bay hawe nodig vir steenkool, en dan China is in die ander kant hier by Saldanha Bay en by Walvis Bay ontsettend besig, mense wat hy nou persoonlik ken, het al die duikboot van China daar in Saldanha Bay gesien, en dan weet ek ook nou, het jy vir my vertel van, dat jy in Las Vegas een praatjie gehad het vir die Suidlanders, specifiek half hier oor, gaan jy met ons een bykie deel en Marius se vraag dan antwoord oor wat gaan aangaan met ons havens in hierdie tyd wat kom?
Yeah, well I think the first thing to say is to repeat something that many people already know from Mr. Miller, and that is that if a major war breaks out in the Middle East or a third world war or a very serious event, one of the most strategic choke points of the world is going to be contested by very heavyweight parties, and that is going to render it unusable, and that is the canal. I'm having a brain freeze in Egypt. Anyway.
The Suez Canal.
Yeah. Which was originally built by the British and French together, and then it was nationalized under Gamal Abdel Nasser. And so it's an Egyptian resource, but it is used as a shortcut between Europe and Asia that saves a hang of a lot of distance going around the whole of Africa. So once that becomes unusable, the strategic value of the Southern Sea Route, that is to say the route around the Cape, will become 100 times more important than it is now. Along with that will be the ability of countries to extract necessary resources from Africa. And that list is very, very long. There's lithium and bauxite, and by now I think most people know that South Africa produces 83% of the world's chromium. South Africa produces 43% of the world's manganese, and manganese is, has many purposes, but it's kind of stereotype use. You know, if you say, what is the stereotype use of gold? You might say, oh, it's for wedding bands. What is the stereotype use of diamonds? You know, people will have different ideas from wedding rings to cutting things, whatever. The stereotype purpose of manganese, although it has many other purposes, is for hardening steel, particularly for military applications. So, if there's a great war going on, various peoples are going to be squabbling over getting all sorts of minerals out of Africa. When I was in the USA a few years ago, Mr. Miller deployed me to hold a meeting with a man whose name I can't mention, but he is a world famous in the field of mercenaries and, you know, for hire soldiers. He's the biggest in the world, or he was. And we held a confidential private meeting on behalf of Mr. Miller. And I was explaining to him what was cooking in South Africa and what we anticipated and so on. And he said to me, "Well, I hope that everything that you say is wrong, because I just put a whole lot of money into extracting bauxite from Zaire, from Congo, DRC, if I remember correctly." And he said, "And as it happens, the business is based in South Africa because we have to use the port of Saldanha or the port of Cape Town. I think Saldanha." The point being that there are inadequate port facilities in many locations in Africa. And so the Chinese are frantically developing port facilities in West Africa that allow them to take bauxite or whatever else from the West Coast and presumably around Cape Town to China. And we know that the Russians have invested in the MK party, which is centered in Natal. So presumably they anticipate forging a very strong alliance with the Zulus in the time that lies ahead, and presumably capturing or anticipating capturing perhaps Port Elizabeth, Durban and Richards Bay, or just Durban and Richards Bay, or just Durban. I couldn't tell you exactly, but I should think at least Durban and Richards Bay, because they're both in Zulu-controlled areas. You don't have to have more than one alliance with different peoples who might be at war with one another, such as the Xhosas around Port Elizabeth. That seems to be on the cards. It seems highly unlikely that, without going into detail, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but it's highly unlikely that that scenario that Mr. Miller has sketched and spoken about extensively is not going to transpire. Everything points in that direction. And when you control as much of the world's resources as we do, which is not to say that we're the biggest or the best, but we hold a great chunk, then you are bound to be the object of the attentions of the great powers. And it's almost certain that some sort of NATO / American / European / Western force, some force representing those entities, loosely speaking, is going to believe that it should find itself squarely in the Western Cape. There are numerous reasons for us to believe that. And some kind of Chinese force, where, how, Saldanha, further north, I don't know. So there may be a fight over that. And that shows you immediately, you know, Mr. Miller's identifying this thing. People are talking about it. We know what's going on in Angola. I've witnessed it myself. I haven't been there for years, but the last time I was there was a lot of Chinese activity, port development, infrastructure development, rail development. The last time I was in Congo, Brazzaville, they were on the verge of a large Chinese rail development. But we also know, as I say, that in the Western Cape, there have been all sorts of movements between the DA and, let's call them Western powers, the U.S. State Department and so on. So it looks like it's going to be a bun fight, and that area is going to become very important. Who's going to get what in the end? I'm not yet sure. Marius, does that help?
Ja, Simon, dit doen. Interessante punt soos wat Marius van Namibië nou gesê het is, die Europese lande kan nie regtig waar sonder ons steenkool nie. Hulle het dit brood nodig, maar as Rusland dan vir Richards Bay en daai gedeelte waarvan af ons steenkool uitvoer na die ander lande toe, dan onder beheer het, en Rusland sit hulle gas en krag af vir Europa, dan is Europa in die moeilikheid as dit kom by kragsentrales en wat ook al hulle alles doen met die steenkool.
Well, that's the thing, Marius. You know, I listened to a presentation this morning in which it's two guys. They call themselves the Duran. And the one guy is like the, you know, kind of genius boy. He's got all the answers. And the other guy is the more sort of charming facilitator. Also a very, very clever guy. But he facilitates the conversation more. Because the other guy is like an autistic savant, you know, he's he'd never be able to present anything, you know, to do that role without his friend's help. And the kind of the cool guy said to the sort of genius chappy, but now I don't understand because this isn't logical. And the autistic guy said, yes, but that's the whole problem. Is that everybody's trying to look at this logically, and it's not logical. If you consider that Europe is heavily dependent upon Russian liquefied natural gas, and that they facilitated the blowing up of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines. In other words, they shot themselves in the foot deliberately, consciously, purposefully. They cut off their nose to spite their face. Then you begin to get a better comprehension of something that I've been alluding to with you over the past weeks of this program. And that is that much of what's going on in the world cannot be explained by logic and power plays and self-interest and the traditional modes of perceiving things, the traditional lenses, the traditional spectacles through which we look at behavior in the world. We have to consider illogical things. And that's what we're alluding to every time that I bring up the Talmudists, and which is basically the entirety of Judaism. You know, there is this fallacy that not every Jew is an Orthodox Jew. Yeah, but 95% are, and that counts. You can't even get automatic Israeli citizenship as every Jew can. It's not true. If you're not an Orthodox Jew, you don't count as a Jew for them. So in their minds, every Jew that can means, every Jew can means Orthodox Jews. And Reform and Conservative Jews may not. So all, for our practical intents and purposes, holding a conversation with one another and trying to keep it simple so that people who are unfamiliar with the subject can follow without being dishonest, but keeping it kind of straightforward. Judaism is orthodoxy, and orthodoxy is Talmudism. Yeah. Orthodoxy is the Mishnah Torah and its commentary, the Gemara, which together mean Talmud. Actually, yeah, let me not complicate it. So, people can't fathom what's going on in Gaza. But if you listen to a rabbi explain in simple English, well, with lots of Yiddish and Hebrew thrown in, you do need a working knowledge of those languages. And then you understand that this is not, it has no purpose whatsoever except to reenact Samson's destruction of the Philistines. Likewise, this invasion of Lebanon now is to go to the Litani River. The Litani River is the traditional northern extent or northern border of the of Greater Israel. Yeah. So my point is, I know I've been a bit long-winded, for Marius's benefit, we have to be very, very open-minded about these guys. You know, what are they going to do without our coal? Well, I don't know what they're going to do without the gas that they're no longer getting from Russia. What we know that's happened so far, that they prevented themselves from getting by facilitating the blowing up of those pipelines. What we know is that some months ago, a 1,000-year-old business closed down in Germany. It just couldn't anymore.
Wow.
We know that all sorts of records for bankruptcies and receiverships and liquidations and insolvencies and technical insolvencies are being broken right across the length and the breadth of Europe.
Yeah.
We know that the growth figures that the Europeans have been issuing are awful, but they are probably exaggerated. So the people who lead Europe are not committed to Europe. They're committed to fulfilling the agenda of the people who put them in those power positions. And we all watched the interview by Tucker Carlson of Senator Thomas Massey, I suppose 10 weeks ago, in which Thomas Massey revealed that all 435 members of the United States House of Representatives, the lower house of the Congress, and all 100 members of the Senate, except him, have an Israeli who supervises them, a person who is a member of the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee, I think, or Council. And they are all dual citizens, so they are all Israelis, as much as somebody might say that they're Americans, they are Israelis. And they supervise all of the 535 members of the Congress of the United States of America, one by one, except for one guy. So once you start to see that the leadership of the whole world is dragging us to hell, you have to take a step back and try not to think of it in terms of the logic and the reason and the rationale that our parents brought us up to use.
Yeah.
To look at it a completely different way.
Yeah, yeah. En dan het ons laas week gesê, ons gaan een bykie raak aan Turkije ook. So net so elke nou en dan sien ek ietsie raak van Turkije, maar ek is nie heeltemal seker van Turkije nie. Ek weet hulle is op hierdie stadium, so ver ek het reg het, is hulle teen Israel en wat aangaan daar in Israel. En dan weet ek ook, Siener van Rensburg het ook gesig gehad van Turkije. Maar soos ek sê, dit is net soke strooihelms wat ek half gryp. En dit is ook om ek graag vir jou wil vra, Turkije, vertel ons meer die rol van wat aangaan in Turkije en wat denk jy gaan die rol van Turkije nou in die volgende paar maande wees?
Yeah, this is a difficult question, Marius, because there is so much controversy within Christianity over the interpretation of certain verses of the Bible that I'm hesitant to say, well, you know, according to my research, this is Turkey and Turkey does that and Turkey the next thing. You know, some people might say, well, my pastor says just the opposite. Now you've made me really cross. So I'm going to play it very safe, which I don't think is going to lead to a terrific answer, but it will lead to an answer that doesn't upset too many people. We know that in the book Ezekiel 38, there's a sketch of the rebuilding of Israel. The land is newly repopulated. That's 38 verse 8. We know that at that time, when Israel has been repopulated after being desolate for a very long time, and this has been written about by Christians very extensively. Theodore Roosevelt, Mark Twain, many recorded in the early 20th century and the late 19th century, early 19th, the 18th century, how Israel was a land of nothing. And they would write, how could this possibly be God's land? Just look at it. It's atrocious. And along come the Israelis and they fix it up and they make something special of it. And so it is that they believe, I don't say that anybody else should believe it, that they have fulfilled very much of that prophecy. They came back and they made a garden out of that land. Now, I would be the first to say to you that the process by which they regained that land was devilish. It was absolutely devilish. And it's hypocritical, in my opinion, to say that because the outcome was good, the ends justify the means. But I'm telling you what they believe. And we know from Christian scholars, I'm kind of going to undermine my argument here, but we know from Christian scholars like Merrill F. Unger and others that one of the lands that works for or with Gog, the prince who leads the land of Magog into this final conflict, is probably Turkey. It is almost certainly Turkey, going by the description, and I've looked into this, Marius. So we know that Russia and China are building a tremendous alliance for the purposes of war, for the purposes of BRICS, for the purposes of the new currency, for the purposes of creating a multipolar world, for the purposes of just building a strong axis, you know, getting all your buddies together and saying, hey, let's come on, fight arms. Excuse me. And we know that Turkey is trying very hard to enter BRICS, but it is a member of NATO. Now, I gather that you can't be both. Apparently, there's a technical reason. I don't understand it, but I've heard it discussed by very, very well-informed people. Apparently, there's something that would prevent it, that NATO would not allow Turkey to be part of BRICS because of some or other sticking point somewhere in the one of the two treaties, you know, that they would have to, they're obviously part of the NATO treaty and they would have to be part of the BRICS treaty fundamentally. But the Turks are still trying very, very, very hard to cozy up to this Russia, China, Saudi Arabia, India, Brazil, South Africa, Iran alliance. And Turkey, like Iran and Iraq, has a very, very high opinion of who and what they are. They are the Uthman Empire, what is rendered in English the Ottoman Empire, but it's very poor English. Just as Iraqis know that they are the people who once ruled the world in the form of Babylon. And Irani people are very, very proud to be the the successors of thousands of years to the Persian identity, the Persians, the Medes, the Chaldeans. Those people know who they are and they take enormous pride in it. And when they read or they hear that we believe that the whore of Babylon is going to perform such and such and such a role in the time that comes, we may think, okay, it's the Roman Catholic Church, or no, it's the Americans, or no, it's got something to do with the foot of clay. No, you know, we all argue about this. All that they hear is, we will be great again, and we're going to smash them. So Turkey, similarly, it's not exactly the same. Turkey draws on many, many hundreds of years of great national pride in who and what they are. And we don't see them that way. Turkey, their GDP is this, they're this, that, blah, blah, blah. You know, the soccer team came 25th in the World Cup. the GDP is low, standard of living is low. I went to Turkey and the beaches were dirty, whatever. You know, we see them in a kind of a dim light. We don't see them as part of the garden of the world, whereas we look at, you know, when we think of ourselves, we get all warm and tingly about being white. We just love it. You know, we come from Europe and we built the castles and the cathedrals and we invented this and we invented that. And how dare these people, you know, talk to us about cultural appropriation. Look, he's wearing shoes. He's got a watch. So we're very quick to love ourselves, but we sometimes lose sight of the fact that some of these peoples have a love for themselves that reaches back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And it they believe that it can be reanimated, the success, the greatness of their culture. And to put it simply, Turkey is the biggest land army in NATO club. Nobody knows that.
Sure.
If you could ask 10 people to each have 10 guesses, that's 100 guesses. And people say, I don't know, maybe is it the British, the French, the Germans, it's Turkey.
Wow.
So if Turkey leaves NATO, it will absolutely rip the guts out of NATO. You know, when I was in the USA most recently, I made friends with a guy called Gordon Dietz of Sayre, Pennsylvania. A hang of a nice guy. And I was introduced by somebody who knows him very well. And the guy who knows him very well, who's a very, very close friend of mine, said to me, listen, I should just tell you one thing about Gordon. He's a very shy guy. But, you know, he's a superstar. I said, yeah, okay, great. He's shy, no problem. So I got to know Gordon. We spent a lot of time together because I had to hang around a certain area waiting for some things to happen for quite a while. We spent, you know, couple of hours every day together. He became my go-to man. And he said to me one day, one of the most unbelievable things, but in his shy way, he said, Simon, I want to ask you a question. I said, yes, Gordon, what's the story? Spit it out, man. He said, you know how, and I should mention, sorry, I beg your pardon, I forgot to mention something. This guy follows everything that he can about Saitlanders. Every video, every everything. He once got me to translate 2.5 hours of Mr. Miller's speeches, word by word. Like, he's a fanatic. So he knows everything. Excuse me. He said to me, you know how you guys believe that Russia is going to storm through Turkey, you know, from the border right to the sea, to the Black Sea. Excuse me again, in one night. I said, yeah, yeah. He said, well, haven't we learned in the Ukraine war that just a company of men can stop an entire division? Not maybe for long, but they can hamper their passage. They can block a few roads. They can, you know, with modern weapons, blow up roads, blow up railways, blow up bridges. So even though Turkey is so much weaker than Russia, it doesn't make sense that Russia would just be able to over them. He said, wouldn't it make more sense to think of it as Turkey is on Russia's side and they open the door, they open the gates for Russia? I said, Gordon, you're the man. Wow, fantastic. Isn't it so beautiful to discover we as Saitlanders who are preparing to receive the Christian world, who, as Mr. Miller has always been at pains to insist on, we will receive as equals, not as the hosts, as the older occupiers, but not the senior or superior occupiers. We will receive them as brothers. And here's a guy in the USA who loves Saitlanders, who loves the prophecies of Wimsina von Rensburg, a committed Christian, applying his mind to our things as an equal, presuming he's going to make it here, as an equal, saying, hey, guys, I think I've got it. Here is the key that unlocks the door. And vrachtach, werke. So if Turkey does do an about turn, if it does betray NATO, if it does slip into the BRICS is obviously not a military alliance, but we know what we're talking about. We're talking about the same countries who appear to be aligning to oppose the West economically and, it seems, in terms of warfare in the very near future. If Turkey does go across to that side, it will be one of the biggest Dani Gerber sidesteps in the history of international politics. So that's what I have to say about Turkey, and I hope that nobody felt that I was reading too much into something that is generally disputed by Christians.
Ons het nou die havens gedoen, ons het nou vir Turkye gedoen. Jy het vandag vir my nogal iets interessants gestuur, Maar ja, is daar iets wat jy dalk die luisteraars voor wil lis maak vir volgende week? Iets wat jy oor opgewonde is, wat ons dalk kan oor gesels volgende week? Ek weet, wekeliks kom daar soveel nuwe nuus in van wat aan die gang is in die wêreld. Maar ja, is dit altyd lekker om so lismakertjie vir hulle te gee oor wat ons dalk volgende week kan bespreek.
Well, if next week is a quiet week and it doesn't generate its own dramatic events for us to discuss, then we can discuss the events of the past few days. Israel assassinating four top leaders of Hamas and Iran and so on. The USA saying that it's willing to go to war for Israel. I mean, saying it explicitly. Last Saturday, Benjamin Netanyahu gave us, was it Saturday? It may not have been. gave a speech to the Congress that received, there are different counts of what was at one standing ovation and what was two, but at least 24 standing ovations. They are fanatically committing themselves to defending Israel. We know that the USA changed the laws pertaining to conscription in an election year. You can't do that. They never have before and they never will again. You don't do that. You don't risk being defeated in the elections because you've upset every mother in your state and every young fellow in your state. Yeah. And now we see what is the reason. The U.S. is preparing to raise, I don't know, maybe a 2 million man army to go to war in Ukraine and in Israel. We hear this evening that the U.S. already has stationed, it's sending more ships. It already has stationed around Israel, 12 vessels.
Yeah.
We know that the main Iranian guy, you know, that leader was assassinated a couple of weeks back in the helicopter crash, is saying that there will be retaliation for the assassination on Iranian soil of the day before yesterday. There will be retaliation within 72 hours. The world is on the edge of its seat, and I don't want to take up too much time. I think I've made the point. This week has been one of the most dramatic weeks in history, and we can talk about it next week. We can talk about what the USA is doing, what Israel is doing, what the six Arab states who are preparing to attack it are doing. There'll be tons to talk about. This could be. We may look back on this week as the week that was equivalent to the week of intense negotiations before the beginning of World War II, not the beginning of World War II on the 1st of September 1939, but the week, a short period prior, where there were frantic negotiations and everybody just suddenly positioned themselves to blix and makar. That could turn out to be this week, as far as World War III is concerned.
Sure. Yeah. Maar ja, op daardie lekker noot, hierdie week was besig in die nuus gewees, en ja, dit sal ook 'n lekker geselsprogram dan volgende week uitmaak, en sy daar nou iets anderster, groter gebeur, soos Wêreldoorlog 3, wat officieel aangekondig word, daar is natuurlik baie mense wat dink hy sal klaar in die agtergrond aan die gang, maar Simon, weer eens, baie dankie vir jou tyd wat jy opoffer om bietjie hier te kom gesels op Radio Groot Rivier. Ons geniet dit baie, die luisteraars geniet dit baie, en ek nooi weer eens, ek nooi al die luisteraars uit, as hulle spesifieke vraag het wat hulle graag vir jou wil vra, kan hulle dit net vir my deurstuur, en dan kan ek dit met jou bespreek, en dan kan ons dalk volgende week ook daaroor praat.
It would be my pleasure to do so, and I thank you, and I thank ultimately Mr. Miller for this opportunity. Thank you very much, Marius.
Dankie, Simon. Lekker aand vir jou. Tot ziens.
Dankie, cheerio. Bye-bye.
Allee, so dit was Simon Roche gewees. Hy is natuurlijk die nationale departementshoof van buitenlands by die Suidlanders, een man met baie kennis, en wat sy werk dit is om dop te hou oor wat in die wêreld aan die gang is. En ek moet sê, Simon het altyd al vir my 'n antwoord as ek vir hom vra, ek vang net so die hoogtepunte altyd van wat op die oomblik in die wêreld aan die gang is, maar ja, as ek vir Simon 'n vraag vra, dan kan hy vir my definitief meer in diepte vertel oor wat is aan die gebeur, wie het vir wie wat gedoen en hoekom is die konflik, hoekom is die pot al hoe meer besig om te kook en te kook en te kook en soos hy sê, miskien is dit hierdie week die week waarna ons gaan terugkyk wat die laaste week was van hulle die pot kook, voordat hy nou oorstroom met sy kookwater of ontplof of wat ook al mens wil sê. Ek hoop julle het geniet saam met my. Kom ons gaan teruggaan na die musiek toe. Onthou, ek gaan hierdie episode sal ek ook op 'n pot gooi laai, so as jy van hulle gemis het en jy wil teruggaan en gaan luister wat Simon en ook van die ander nasionale departementshoofde van Suidlanders gesels het, soos byvoorbeeld landbou, sekuriteit, medies en so voort, gaan luister gerus daarna, dit is regtig waar merkwaardig, dit gee vir jou goeie insig oor Suidlanders se visie, wat hulle doen, hoe is hulle besig om voor te berei, en ja, dit is net ek kom nou net op die Engelse ding af, a well of information, man, maar ja, dit is baie informatie wat goed is vir mens om te hoor.